It is only want of space that made us sit in some place. We discussed about the need for maintaining the diaries on the part of all, number one. Number two, a constant review of the condition of the abhyasis by the trainers. Personally benefited by the greatness of the system and by the love of the master, most of us feel that we have got a duty to record the advantages we got so that posterity may get better appreciation of the system vis-a-vis others. We have no intention as an institute to decry other systems, but we have a definite confidence that if we do the practice as has been prescribed by the great master and we take recourse to a very, very rational approach to the whole problem of existence, we will be presenting to the world an unassailable evidence of the efficacy of our system. Individuals, case studies have got their own value. Still, a methodology and the scientificness of the system has to be proved instead of just talking about a few examples, because few examples can be found everywhere. God's grace is definitely not restricted to any particular channel. It is available for all. But the methodology helps a lot. So in that direction, we were having some discussions which will come to you. So pardon me for the delay. Before I take up the assignment given to me by Brigadier Krishnaya Garu on talking about the craving of the soul, more as a dialogue with you than a monologue, I would like to, if it may be called so, a digression from the theme of the training program. We met on the occasion of the training course as well as a part of the Janmashtami celebrations we are having. The Lord says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namukuru Mame Vaishyasi Satyante Pratijane Priyosimi. He assures, please Manmana Bhava, please be in my consciousness, be devoted to me, Madbhakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. Understand that you have got to offer your salutations to me. The Lord says so. Also, He assures that you are dear to me. Priyosimi. And our great master, Babaji Maharaj, echoes the same feeling. Without this idea of total surrender to the great master, all the time getting ourselves oriented to His consciousness, being devoted to Him, and having the confidence that we are dear to Him. He is dear to us, most of us agree. Please recognize that He says that we are dear to Him. There are other talks by other people where they'll be talking about the concept of yearning towards the circumference, where they will talk about the love of the great master. I thought a few words may help you maintain the consciousness I share with you. I love, O love, I give myself to thee, thine ever, only thine to be. O love, not a master here, we are calling him love, we are dear to him, he is our lover. I give myself to thee, thine ever, only thine to be. I am yours, and forever yours. I remembered one more, where a great seeker tells us, co-seekers, hast thou not heard his silent steps? He comes, comes, ever comes. My idea in telling this thought is, during meditation we know that he comes to you more consciously, more vividly. You are aware of the deep silence of love, the intimacy between only the lover and the lover, beloved and the lover. The intimacy and silence is unique, individual, and cannot be compared with anybody else. Because such comparisons have been made, saying that so-and-so person is more blessed, so-and-so person is less blessed. All are blessed. God's love knows no limitations. While it is an individual relationship for us, for him, it is a unique relationship with all. And with these few thoughts on Gita, I move on to the subject, craving of the soul. This is a message that was given almost at the fag end of the material existence of our Babaji Maharaj. That's on 30th of April 1981. Before this, let me assure you one small sentence which I shared just now with my brothers. When I talk about the O Master, I talk about the Master who has all the masters of the hour in him. The special personality has got in him all the past masters. And there is no question of your trying to distinguish between the Master and Lord Krishna, a point that was made clearer in his letter to Dr. KCV when clarifications were sought on a dream of Lord Krishna. You may read the books. I don't have it. I donated the books that are given to me. I don't have it. Nor do we print it. I have the original cyclostyle material. I personally don't require it. But you can take my word for it. And that was made clear in one of the letters. The mistake you have done, Vardhachari, I mean, he says that I'm ashamed to answer this question. Since you differentiated between me and him, Krishna disappeared. That is the broadly, exact, literally it is not that, but that is the thought that was conveyed. The same thought I conveyed to you, and I request you not to differentiate between Lord Krishna and our Master, just as it has been my request earlier not to differentiate between Lalaji Maharaj and Babuji Maharaj. In spite of it, there are certain Abhyasis who write to me saying that we feel more attached to Lalaji. Some people write to me say that we felt the grace of the Master coming from Lalaji. I think this type of psychological aberrations must be put down. There are Chitta Vaikalyam. We cannot accept it. Please come out of all these things and remember the one Master. Anyway, dear brothers, this is what Master writes. Significantly, there's an omission of sisters here. I don't know why. I leave it to you to imagine. Man is generally charmed so much by the environment as he has made for himself unconsciously, that he seldom thinks of rising about it. That is, we generally say the environment is like this and all that, but it is not the environment, some abstract concept, but that environment is what we have made. It is our making. Environment as he has made for himself unconsciously. He does not know that he is creating his own environment. And he puts the question, just as you and I would like to put in. How is it possible, sir, that I should make such an environment like this? But how is this to be made possible? When we ponder over it, we find that we have set up in us a community of thoughts, feeding it with impulses, nurtured in the nursery of the brain. Views from all corners resound the same note in the ears, giving additional strength and intensifying the effect of the environment further. Fairly a long sentence, just got enormous load. I would like to draw your attention to the thought, community of thoughts. We know the community of men. Do you know the community of thoughts? Have you ever heard this expression? But then this was given in 81, and today we are in 2001. For 20 years we did not think about it. I am not criticizing you. I am only trying to tell how seriously we view the literature that has been passed on to us. What is this community of thoughts? For your information, I again invite your attention to Lord Krishna, who talked about a pravritti and a nivritti, a daivya pravritti and an asuriya pravritti. Two things he talked. So there are people who are God-oriented, godly in nature. There are people who are ungodly in nature. That's a community. A community of asuras. Do we belong to the community of asuras, or do we have the thoughts which belong to the community of devas? That is the crux. Where do we live? Community of thoughts. What thoughts? Thoughts are not abstract concepts. Thoughts are what we are suffering from or enjoying. Either way, you can put it. You can say you are enjoying the thoughts or you are suffering the thought. But then it's yours. It's a concrete thing. It's not an abstract idea. We tend to abstract because mathematics has taken enormous precedence in our head as a science of sciences, as the mother or the father or whatever, it is the grandfather of sciences. You can use any word you like. This attitude of trying to make things abstract in sadhana is what actually ails, is one of our problems. If you get to know what exactly is the thought you are suffering from, perhaps you will definitely come out of it. Instead, all the abhyasis that I have come across, I ask several questions, they will say, sir, several thoughts have come, sir. I said, okay, what are those thoughts? What is the nature of the thought? Were they divine? Were they undivine? Were they beastly? Were they animalish or human? Are just some abstract concept of an Einstein's theory? I don't think we suffer from such concepts of Newton's theory or Einstein's theory or somebody else's theory when we meditate. They don't come. What we get is an either animal thought or a human thought or a divine thought or something like that. But we don't want to classify that. We would like to classify it saying, sir, thoughts come, sir. Disturbing, sir. I don't know, what is it that is being disturbed? How balanced you were earlier to say that you are disturbed now? That also I do not know. Okay, I am now posing questions to you so that you may ask me it. I would not like to give an answer for this, because I can be going on talking like this. Or as Babaji has written, we can read the whole thing and then say we have understood. But then have we understood this? When we ponder over it, we find that we have set up a community of thoughts, feeding it with impulses. We give the weight for it, feeding it with impulses, nurtured in the nursery of the brain. That is yours. Nobody else has given these thoughts. The asuri thought is yours. The daivi thought is yours. It is your making. It is your nursery. Had you put proper manures, had you put the proper seed, you would have definitely got a beautiful flower. You would not have got thorn. The much adored flower nowadays, the rose, has got invariably certain thorns with it. I think it typically signifies what is the brain of a modern man. He has got some roses, along with it has got also thorns. It is necessary that we should remove these thorns before we offer it to God. Nobody offers the roses along with the thorns in a garland, either for God or for men. It's our duty. If you are not capable of getting only flowers, like a jasmine, without the thorns, then I think you should be prepared to do the weeding job. If you are a fortunate one, okay, happy. Views from all corners resound in the same note. That is, according to your nature of thoughts, any view expressed by other is viewed from that context. An opportunity for spiritual growth, suppose we say, is there, and you are having an asuric mind, you would use it to manipulate others to make them think that you are a great guru. This has been done. I am not talking any abstract things. People tend to become demonical gurus, who would like to have other people as pashus. They don't have any difficulty in converting into a guru pashu, as Babuji puts it. Because you are nurtured, you are brain like that. Your thoughts are like that. When some input comes to you, you view it from that angle only. Any input that you are looking at it, suppose you are looking at negatively, it means that you are already having the such type of notions. You have already have got a negative attitude in your head. As Lalaji Maharaj puts it, he says it, you cannot see a blemish in others unless you've got a blemish in you. It's impossible, he said. The same concept is what is being explained here when he says that views from all corners resound the same note in their ears, giving additional strength. So what does it do? When I get some input, I try to use it, either for my good or bad. And it gives additional strength, either for the good or the bad. And intensifying the effect of the environment further. So the environment is something that is in your head, not outside. Because it is a situation as viewed by you. We are not talking about the gross physical environments. Because the subject under consideration is one of thought, one of divinity, one of meditation. We are not talking about the amount of pollution that is available in a cement factory. That pollution is physical. And it doesn't leave a load in your head unless you got an odd notion that cement itself is bad for the world. You can't help it. The production process has got that problem. A hospital throws out a lot of pollution outside. All sorts of syringes, all sorts of dirty material is thrown out. There's a way of disposal, you are taught. But you can't help it. But nobody thinks about that pollution when he is in meditation. Here they are not part of our internal environment. They are part of the external environment. Most of us give excuses of these disturbing thoughts that we have got and then say, the selflessness of man may be treated as his defense. Most of us would argue, sir, unfortunate fellow, he is suffering from those thoughts. We talk on behalf of, let's take a defense for him. Some people do that. But I would say, when once we have realized that these are the spoiling agents, it means some diversion has come in. That is, if you at least understand these are the spoiling things, some diversion has already happened. You are thinking in terms of how to get rid of it. You know that it is something bad, so you would definitely, when you know that it is a spoiling agent, you would definitely try to come out of it. This may be taken as the first step towards vairagya or renunciation. My question to most of you would be, have you felt so? Is this so? When he says this is the first step, a vairagya, and vairagya is the first step in the path of adhyatmika yatra, have you at least this awareness that your mind is polluted, that it is giving you enormous problems, and that you have to get out of it? Or Are you enjoying that pollution? It becomes suffocating for me when some people use all sorts of deodorants, as they call it, on their body and in the room. And then I say, what is this suffocating experience I have got? They enjoy it. I suffer from that. That we are capable of enjoying filth is something that you and I should honestly accept. Because most of your attachments are just that. But we enjoy it. Everybody who knows eating a masala dosa gives a very bad stomach and perhaps a nuisance to others by his side. But then how many relish it? The filth is relished. I'm sorry if there are any admirers of masala dosa here. But definitely it is not something that is conducive for health. Number one, it is not conducive for the environment because you are going to make it foul. Number two, your mouth smells bad, you can't talk to a person nearby. Number three, and in spite of all these things, you enjoy the filth, right or wrong. Don't think that Babuji's statement that we don't enjoy filth. We enjoy filth. Have you come to the conclusion that we should not enjoy filth? That is the first step of renunciation. Yes, we enjoy it. We enjoy the what we call the pornographic material. We also enjoy the terror or the violence. You seem to have an inherent capacity of being a tiger or a lion, and incapable of being so in reality. You would like to be so at least virtually. Why people enjoy this type of terror pictures or terror stories is they would like to be one such. Every person who is a great admirer of detective fiction is basically a person who is a criminal in mind, and since he would not dare to become one because of the social constraints, he becomes virtually one by reading that. This of course takes you to Freud. You better read Freud. I won't talk about it. Because that man has talked much better. More authoritatively he talked about it. There are basic instincts of Eros and Thanatos, as he puts it, in the love and the death, and then both these things are governing you. They are impulses, drives. You can't help it. That takes you to the concept of Kama and Krodha being accepted by Babuji as divine gifts. But once he says that it's a divine gift, I think I have not come across a perverse sadhaka so far who would say that you would enjoy the gift given. I have not come across. I should not be surprised if I come across one. Because we are capable of such twistings. Babaji himself has said, sir, that this is so. So I would like to be that. The devil, quoting the scripture. It does it. This may be taken as a first step towards vairagya, renunciation, and our thought is then set on something better and nobler. Once we want to get out of these things, naturally our thought is the other side. Our duty is to grasp it firmly. These suggestions come to you during your meditation, that you should come out of it. You definitely get it. And he says it is your duty to grasp it. Master is not going to grasp it for you. Master enables an environment in which such a thing is possible for you. And stick to it at all cost. Stick to it at all cost. No. Sir, I know that I should get up early in the morning. I am not able to get. That is, you got the viveka to know that you should get up. You know your sloth is not going to help. You know the message is given. You got the experience of the awareness of that much of viveka, but you don't hold it. You don't want to stick it at all cost. No, no. I must do sadhana for 1 hour. that much of awareness is there. Babaji says it should be 1 hour. Right? We clearly says it 1 hour. The reasons we have explained other places, why it is to be 1 hour, we have explained. Still, you also know that it should be 1 hour, but your body does not help. I have got some babiasis who will say that their physical body does not permit it. But then the ass must obey. Body does not permit is no excuse. The body is an ass. And it should obey. It's a pursuit. When I call it an ass, I don't mean anything derogatory about it. It is one of the noblest of animals, ass. It's a beast of burden. It does so much work for others. The idea behind it is it carries. An ass is something that carries. It carries the burden of my soul. Therefore, it's an ass. No derogatory statement involved. Understand the meaning of the word ass. It's a beast of burden. It carries me. And then it wants to misbehave. And it says, no, no, I will not rest. You will say, you take rest after 15 minutes, not now. It's only 45 minutes since you sat. You sit for another 15 minutes and then you will be given your feed. Not now. No, 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 we get up. There are certain odd notions among the people who will say that because we say that you maintain the posture as far as possible, they say, sir, I have to forcibly change it. Why are you so much vexed about the problem? If you have got to change it and keep quiet. Why are you giving an idea to it? If the ass gives a jolt, we are not going to stop the journey, is it not? It gives a jolt. Let it give. We are going. We'll go further. Why are you obsessed about that jolt? And then take it as an excuse to get up. You are throwing the blame on the ass. Actually, the blame is with you. So, grasping it firmly is what we want. The renunciation develops automatically in our system. These are one of the highest of traps. Because Babaji puts it, it automatically happens. It should automatically happen, sir. All other things that he has said early is forgotten. And this sentence alone is taken care of. This is one of the traps, your mental traps. The sloth in you gives you the trap. The laziness in you gives you the trap. The animal in you gives you the trap. Please note it. Here the point is, in our system, what is being done is, there is a diversion of the flow from the lower to the upper, as has been explained in the explicacy of Raja Yoga. Because of that, this particular wisdom comes to you, and he says the original impulse, you know, the first impulse that comes to you. But I would say, when once we have realized that these are spoiling agents, it means some diversion has come in. For this, you don't have to do Swadhyaya Pravachanecha. For this, you don't have to do Shravana. For this, you don't have to do Manana. You don't have to know that it is wisdom not to get up early in the morning, not to sleep further. It is wisdom to think about the permanency of God and the impermanency of this material world. It is wisdom. For that we have been asked to read a lot of literature in tradition, so that every day you go on hearing that, understand the importance of that, and all that work has been done by the master, by the twist that is given to you, by the upliftment that is given to you in your heart from the lower portion to the upper portion, as has been explained in the efficacy of Raja Yoga. That is what is automatically happening. That is what the divine impulse does it. Not your development of Vairagya, that is your headache. You have to catch it. You have to live up to it. That is the warning of the condition. I hope I am clear. If there is any difference of opinion on this, please kindly explain to me, because I know this is one of the traps. Everybody would expect that he should develop the renunciation because it's a matter of gift from the divine. Gift from the divine is a diversion of the flow. It is your duty, once that flow is diverted, to stick on to that. It's a relay race. You have got to take the relay and then move on. Miss the relay, you wait for the next time. Clear? Any doubts? Any points you want to raise? Please. Because I, as I say, it's a bodhayanti parasparam for us. I am a sadhaka and I continue to be a sadhaka forever. Because I know what is the problem here. And if you ask me, how do you know? Because I was also one. I also thought this will come. But after some time when I thought it has not come, I did not want to throw the blame on the system, but I thought about it, perhaps I am the person to be blamed. Every one of us know that we have not got certain things. But then we would like to throw it on the inefficiency of the system itself, rather than understand that there are lapses on our part. That is all the meaning of a person who shares. If we cannot be frank with each other, I don't think we can have any bodhayanti at all. Parasparam it will not have. I can always give a lecture. People have given lectures. And it has not helped. It has not helped anybody. We must share. We must understand that the other man has also gone through the same process. Then you would like to go and talk to him. But then if you want to suffer always in sloth, nobody is going to help you. Come out of sloth. Know that there is something like permanent, there is something like impermanent. Know there are certain values, know also there are pitfalls. Know there is always somebody who is prepared to put a snarl around your neck and then drag you by it. Call that attachment to your wife or children, father or mother, grandfather or grandchildren. It does not matter much. Money or otherwise, that's a snarl. You are a dog. You are an animal. They put it on your head and then drag you by that. Are you prepared to say no? You don't say no, then nobody can. And that is what his sentence. Our duty is to create duty. Because our duty is to realize. Our duty is to be free, not to be bond. Bond by attachments, bond by other things. You have no business to be bond. It's our duty to be free. How many of us understand it? People talk about it as a right to be free. Right for freedom is what everybody talks in politics. Here we come across a master who talks about a duty to be free. Duty to realize. It's a primary duty of man to realize. That's what he says. It's a primary duty. Primary duty. Not only duty. But then have we understood it that way? Our primary duty is to beg. If I may be pardoned. That is the approach of majority of us. O Master, grant me this. O Master, save me from this. And Master says, free yourself from the Master. Our ultimate aim is not to be bound by the Master also. Free. Swarajyam apnoti. Apnoti manasaspatim, that is, you become the lord of your own mind. Are we? Are we having thoughts which chain us all the time? Bind us all the time? Restrict our movement? Constrict our path? Is this not what is happening to us? Is it anybody's making or our own? It's our own. And since it's our own, it is our duty to get out of it. Nobody has put us in bondage. I was sharing with my brother Madhava some thoughts, and there were a few others also. When the process of meditation that we have got, namely, thinking that there's a divine light in your heart, itself is putting divinity in a cage. Have you thought about this idea? Have you ever read seriously about that particular article? Divinity, which is unbound, unlimited, infinite, ever all-pervasive, we are trying to put it in our heart. That means we are trying to put that into a cage. And then he says it flutters and it wants to get out. And he says it will definitely try to get out, so you also get out along with it, he said. And that is meditation, he says. Have you come across this type of thinking elsewhere? Does it not give you the courage to be free? Don't you understand that our right is to be free? Duty to be free? Duty to be in the company of the divine? Our interdependency with the divine, is it not the truth? All these thoughts come to you during your meditation. We would like to be free. We would like to have the same calmness. Just now as I was reading Tagore's thing, you see, he comes. He seems to be more in need of us than we of him. The moments that we spend thinking about the Master during our meditation are less than the moments of silence that we enjoy. Can any one of you deny? Your conscious attempts to remember the Master during meditation is less than the moments of silence that you have got. Is this not a reassuring factor that God loves us more than we love him? Then why is it we are not responsible to ourselves? Why is it we are not responsible to ourselves? Why is it we are tending to forget our duty? These are all the basic viveka that comes to you from this vairagya. Let me proceed further. The goal of life is easily reached if you are devoted to it, having idea of our Master all the way through. This is what I was driving at. There are different ways of remembering him constantly. Tomorrow, Brigadier Krishna will be talking about constant remembrance. Still, I would say, constant remembrance cannot be confused with bhajan. It is not something very difficult. Most of us are married here. Perhaps some are not. So you change the analogy. Maybe you are one of those fortunate people who have got your spouse here itself. Maybe you are not. Maybe you are one of those fortunate people whose parents are here. Maybe you are not. But immediately, directly before your eyes, they are not there. But the awareness of the spouse or the father or the mother or the children is there with you. You are constantly remembering them. It is not something that has missed your attention even for a second. You are still hearing me. I am still talking to you. The same position obtains in your office. The same position obtains while you go somewhere else. Similarly, all the time, Master can be remembered by us by whatever we do. Now, tradition, as it has come to us with all the impurities that are available, that have been quartered onto it, has taught us certain things, namely bhajan, is a way of constant remembrance. You must be consciously aware of the divine is the talk or the vein of talk of many systems. Consciously remembering the divine may be an exercise, but surely it is not constant remembrance. Everyone suffers from this. It's not your fault. That's one of the faults of the environment. It has given you that type of thinking. The input is like that, making us blind to a daily, day-to-day experience that we remember our people constantly without uttering their names nor keeping their photographs before us, nor reading the letters that they might have sent to you earlier. We remember them naturally. Then why can't we remember the same way the Master? Here comes the problem. We say that we have to consciously remember. So go on telling Babaji, or Ramchandraji, or call something else, whatever you want to call. And say we are now constantly remembering himself. Anyway, by devotion to the highest, we make a channel from us to him that serves as a path to him. Earlier occasion, he has used another thing, that when we think about him, you are at one end of the phone and the other end Master is there, he hears, the channel is made. He gives this here. So channel, if there's a civil engineer here, we'll think in terms of irrigation channel. Suppose there were to be somebody else, the net field, he will say a channel. So I don't know what channels mean. I know only one thing, that there is a connection between two points. Use any word you like. The moment the person who is devoted rings bell here, it's automatically heard there. That's what he says in another occasion. There are three or four examples he gives. Only to tell you, telegraph is one I have already mentioned. Bell is another thing that is mentioned. Channel is the third thing that you got. I don't know whether there are any more. It will be left to the institute to go on doing the research as to what are the examples he has given for the link. What do you mean by the link? Let all of us think together. Give me your reading, your done reading. In such and such place, link is established like this, sir. He has explained this analogy. Then I think we can say, when we use the word link, this is all what Babuji means. We can give a series of things, give the references. That's what an institute is supposed to do. Then only you can tell other person, here is another example given, here is another example is given. Just as umpteen number of stories have been given by tradition, by name of Puranas, all the time trying to tell us that there is one God above, there is a superior being. The attempt of Bhagavata is what? It's only to make us think about a superior being. So many ways, so many Puranas, so many good things. All the time trying to delude our head that there is something more. But then you don't have to do it because the Pranahuti works all the time. Once you are introduced to the system, the Pranahuti works all the time. All that is required is to be just constantly be aware of it, not consciously, but constantly. If you are trying to do it consciously, if you are a driver, you will get into an accident. If you are an engineer, you are likely to see that, civil engineer, you are likely to see the building falls. And if you are to be a surgeon, the patient is unfortunate in your hands. If you are trying to remember the master when you are actually cooperating, the patient is unfortunate. You are very fortunate in remembering him. But then he becomes unfortunate. So don't do such things. Don't make a conscious, because many people have told me this. We try to be consciously aware of himself. You can't do that. The whole method of meditation itself is different. You are asked to think, suppose that there's a divine light, and keep quiet. Always allowing it to work in the subconscious level. So the meditation itself is like that. How can it be different in the case of constant remembrance? Anyway, I'm trespassing the limits of tomorrow's speaker, so I leave it there for him to tackle. No, he will also cover that. When the way is cleaned of all dirt and not the word refuse, there will be no difficulty to tread on it. The channel that we have got, which we try to create between us, the link that we have got, the line that we have got between us and divine, has having a lot of dirt. Okay, dirt is understood. And he uses the word refuse. I don't know if you have read very seriously the diary sayings the last month. You would have noted the word refuse was used in one of the days. And that was referring to truth. Truth is a refuse of reality, he puts it. And this should make many people who are traditional shudder first. What is this concept? Satya, being considered as a refuse. Because the ultimate is not going to be confined to the word Satya. It is not going to be confined to the three adjectives of Sat, Chit and Ananda, however much Raghavan may try to put it in his book. Tomorrow his book is coming up, his commentary is coming up. But then, God refuses to get confined by those words. He's out of this range. And what is this? This is too heavy for him to hold. And that reminds you of the abdomen. Too heavy to hold. Never get rid of it. Refuse. The purity of God is such that it does not accept this impurity of Sat Chit Ananda. This is one of the greatest of statements made by the Master, which there are quite a few here who have experienced. And then they say, yes, it has gone by. It has gone by. Coming to truth, what is truth? What is refuse? Refuse is that it's heavy, we said. And then what is truth, which we consider as refuse? Truth is always with reference to something else. If I make the statement that this is a tumbler, then it makes some sense. Truth by itself has no meaning. It is not an abstract concept. Truth is a relative concept. A statement is true or false. There is nothing like a truth per se. If you can identify God and then say this is God, then he ceases to be God. So our mental modifications, our thoughts, our thought patterns, are the community of thoughts that we have got, which dictate most of these things to us, are the dirt and the refuse. And what is that community? Granting, all of us are in the divine way, all of us are Devi Pravritti, because we are thinking in terms of the goal, there is a tendency towards the divine. I will not digress here to talk about the Asuri Pravritti, which is the normal tenor and talk of all people who attend other religious discourses. I will not do that. Here is a company of divine people who want to move on the path of the divinity. Now, what is the dirt and the refuse that we have got? Our notions of what God is, our notions of what is just, our notions of what ought to be the master, our notions of what should be the experience in pranahuti, our notions of what it is to be calm, these are our notions. This is all our dirt. This is the mala that we have got. Majority of us are suffering from these thoughts only. Because you have the experience of the silence or the deep calm within you. And he comes, and comes to tell you that I am with you. Still, you don't want to accept it. Because what is the dirt that is stopping it? Your perception, your traditional knowledge, which makes you think that it should be a Hari with a Shankha Chakra Gadapane, Dwaraka Nilaya Achyuta. These are the concepts you have got. Or he should be a Nagabhushana, he should be residing in Kailas. Ideas which are very, very odd, which are not experiences during any meditation of any person. They are matters of religious literature. I do not deny the fact that they are matters of religious literature. They are of very high value in understanding our mental states, but only to that extent. They are not the real things that they have seen, but what they have felt. Here I have got a person, maybe a few persons here or there, who have given me the experiences of seeing a blue lotus. I am happy to note that. Blue lotus is something that is kind of supposed to be available only in Manasarovar, nowhere else in the world. I think most of you know lotus are available only in India. And blue lotus is available only in Manasarovar. And he found it in the heart center, blossoming. Great experience. But that is dirt. Tradition would ask me to think that it's a very great experience. But I know it is dirt, it's a refuse, it has to be left behind. Move forward. I can't get stuck to that. I can't get stuck to the Hridaya Kamala. However great it is, however beautiful it is, however enjoyable it is. Because these words I've used now, beauty, connected with your awareness, aesthetic sense, enjoyable, something connected with the pleasure. These are the things that give them the value. When I say I have to go beyond the sensorial things, then where is the question of beauty? Where is the question of being pleasant? It is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. That's what the Master says. When you come to the reality, it is that. So it is God. So God is neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And those of you who would like to be more ethical than most, perhaps may I disagree with me when I say he is neither good nor bad. Good or bad are appropriate or inappropriate situations that we come across or we face in our day-to-day life. They are given by one Manu and not by God. Manu Smriti granted and Ambedkar Smriti also granted. I have no objection. What does it matter? Somebody gives something, some code. But they are codes, codes of social behavior, good and bad, legal and illegal. From the absolute point of view, when you come to the stage of a neti neti, ethical propositions lose their value, it's also dirt. Can we therefore apply that concept that it is dirt in a social behavior? Surely not. And that is what Babuji and Lalaji Maharaj say, that in a society, you follow the rules of the society. If you go to a place, behave as people who go to that place behave. If you go to the smashan, even when you have got the greatest of the vairagya, that the body is something that is perishable, don't laugh there. Try to put the feeling of feeling sorrow. Not, don't say that I am a realized fellow. I know this body is perishable. There is no need for you to worry. Don't try to tell the slokas of Gita. Nanu sochanti panditaha. If you are a pandita, be a pandita in your home, not in the smashan. If you go to the smashan, behave as a person who should behave like that. If you go to your temple, behave like the person who goes to the temple. If you have got to do certain things in some places, go to your club. Okay, go to the club, behave according to the rules of the club. When you come to the meditation class, do the meditation properly. Don't try to tell something else here. There is some etiquette. There are certain rules of behavior which should be followed. But ultimately, if you look at it from your angle, go in deep into your thing, then you know these things do not have value. And what is the advantage of that feeling? Tolerance. You develop tolerance, you develop titiksha, you develop uprati because of that. When you go to the higher states of consciousness, this is what we find. And as a victim of some strong notions, I can tell you, I had occasions of quite a few altercations with my master on the behavioral pattern of others. I had no patience for that. I was impatient to rectify. Then he used to say, no, please wait, it will become all right. I used to say to him that you are a funny person who is trying to compromise all sorts of things. Then he said, yes, I am that only. You will also come to know that what it is. He had his own way of telling. I used to get fret and fume. Many times, the behavior of some people was such odd, obnoxious. Even today, I will not go back on those words. But I have developed tolerance for that obnoxious behavior. On that day, I had no tolerance for it. I was impatient. That there is something wrong from a particular point of view or inappropriate from a particular point of view does not cease to be inappropriate at a later date. It continues to be inappropriate. But we develop tolerance. If you go to the higher angle, to the angle of subspecies eternitatis, as my father would like to put it, the point of the center, when you go to that angle, then no angles exist. No angularities of vision exist. So the dirt and refuse will continue to be with you till the last moment. And we have to go on. When the way is clear, there will be no difficulty to tread on it. The path is cleaner in proportion to our devotion. Our devotion means what? Flattery? Trying to keep one photograph of Master before us? Whatever posture that we like? Put a garland over it, some incense sticks? Then take a harati if necessary? Days will not be far off. Because I understand that there are now certain molds of Master's physical body available. We're having all these days the photographs. Maybe soon we'll be having some sculptures also coming out of it. Each man will make, and the poor Ganesha, I understand, has got now other forms than what originally was granted in tradition. He has got so many heads. I don't know whether there's any great Ganesha Bhakta here, and whether he would object to the faces that are there. And if there were to be a perverse fellow like me, he will put some ass's face also along with other faces and then say, worship it. What is wrong about it? It's a very, very beautiful animal. It has been the best one which carried the great Jesus. We should remember all that. So what is wrong about it? If Garuda can be worshipped, ass can also be done. Garuda carried Vishnu, ass carried Jesus. So what? If you can't take this view of things, you are not going to become free. You are going to be bound by the ideas. Get liberated. Be prepared to put the most ridiculous proposition on. It doesn't matter whether it is Babuji also. This is the problem is one of devotion. Devotion to what? Devotion to our goal. Devotion not to any person. Devotion to the goal. What is our last condition? To be devout. Read Reality of Dharma again. Read Efficacy of Raja again. You will understand that what is the last stage. Is that to be confused with flattery? Is that to be confused with rituals? Is that to be confused with the rites? He's a very devoted person, sir. He attends the satsang that are conducted regularly. Does it make him more devoted? He comes for all the celebrations, sir, of Master. I have regularly been attending 30 celebrations or 40 celebrations. So what? Even the contractor who sells coffee there has been regularly attending that. Has he not been? People have been to Shahjahanpur. The people there also have been, the same fellow has been having the stalls, I know that. Has he not been regularly coming? Does it make him spiritually progress? These are all peculiar ideas, bondages of ideas, community of thoughts we have got, which are detrimental to our progress. Nothing can bind us. Nothing shall bind us. This said, that should be the difference. So the devotion that we are talking about is the devotion to the goal. And if that is there, you will not get stuck by anything else. And then the path can be cleared. If it's something other than that, something that is penultimate, as my father would like to put it, then you are getting stuck up at that penultimate. That penultimate may be Narayana, that may be the penultimate may be Mahavishnu, that may be Shankara, that may be Vigneshwara, that may be a Nagasa, Nagesa, it does not matter much. What does it matter? At which level you get stuck up, what does it matter? We get stuck up. Your heart is very pure, it is as good as a golden cage. Would God still reside there? You would flutter and fly. You will not accept your golden cage. I am the most pure being, sir. You ought to be staying here only all the time. Then he will say, sorry, gentlemen, I have got to go. If you want to come with me, we can fly with him. You receive a push from the heart while meditating on him to impel you on the way. Is it not a fact? But are we treading the path? Don't we get the push? Don't you feel that amount of release? Is it not felt by some of us as jerks, which makes them move this way or that way? It impels according to the need. Some people feel it light, some people feel it strongly. The same person feels it certain times light, certain times very strongly. If the resistance is more, the push is more. If the resistance is less, the push is normal. Suppose you're up the incline, you definitely push the cart up with a firm push up. The dirt and refuse our conflicting ideas. Now people have been asking the question, what is mala? And he has answered, conflicting ideas. What is conflicting? What do you mean by conflicting here? We seem to understand the word conflict, but have we? Can anyone of you help me in just telling what is this conflicting ideas?
Disturbed state, which causes you don't feel natural and free, you feel disturbed in your mind.
Any other idea other than that?
Which is not in tune with the goal.
You be aware of the thoughts.
Anything else?
Some far and some against thoughts clashing.
Yeah.
Far and positive and negative thoughts.
That is conflict.
In collision.
Yes.
They are getting into conflict, which you are not able to come to a neutrality. So there is a big conflict in
you. Any other idea that you have to share?
There is a dialogue which goes on in the mind.
Right. Dialogue between positive and negative. Right. Then?
Trying to walk together with God and member at the same time.
Same thing, what you said. Two conflict, one is divine and another. The point is, all of us are right. Each one of us have given it from our point of view. Anukul is a sankalpa, pratikul is a varjanam. Well said. What you said is a dynamics. What he said also is a dynamics. We want to own only that anukul is. And whatever is the pratikula, we want to get rid of it. But we seem to be helplessly facing between this, and then the conflict is going on. And that is the dirt. And that can be got rid of only by your constantly remembering the presence of the divine, which you have experienced in your meditation. This point I tried to make it in my centenary article, where I said meditation. I was trying to stress that this point, that namely, please be aware of the divine call. This morning also I was telling this. He is coming. He is the one positive indication for us to stick on to the path of righteousness. And then with a firm grip, throw it out. Throw the other one. The negative aspect definitely clings on to you. You have got to throw it out. It is a pratikul, it's a varjanam. That's a will that has to be done. Oh, master, please help me to come out of this. No, please, sir, this is yours. I can only say that I am with you. The great Krishna said to Partha, I am with you, it's for you to have the battle. He never said that I will battle for you. He will never do that. God will never fight your battle. It is your headache. He will give the company, give the assurance that the righteousness will win. God is just. He is a Samavarti. Please note that righteousness will always win. Your difficulty is the negative aspect of it seems to be more attractive in terms of mundane matters. I have to do something for the good of others. I have to sacrifice, not give alms. Giving alms is what some religions talk about. I don't talk about that. Because Babaji asks you to sacrifice. Sacrifice means giving more than what you can afford. The misfortune is we don't want to give what we can afford also. Even alms we are not free. The only reason is the pressure that you get from people to whom you are attached. They are the pulling factors. It can be the husband or the wife, it does not matter much, or the father or the son. Who stops you from sacrificing? It is they who stop you from sacrificing. It is these attachments that sacrifice. These attachments are temporary. You have got that wisdom already, but then still you don't. If you know, I am always with you, please note that I am here to help you, get out of these things, and you will still say that, sir, I have got a mind which is disturbed. Because you still, as you said it, you don't want to choose God and do not know whether you should not choose mammon. You are not made up your mind. And that is the reason for the conflict. The conflict situation is not something that is external to us. It is internal to us. A Sibi could be a Sibi. A Bali could be a Bali. Because they were prepared to ignore the advices of the well-wishers, their alleged well-wishers. And he said, shut up your mouth. Kare Rajalu. Have there not been kings? We are not emperors. We are not Sibis. We are not Balis. We are very, very small people having very, very small properties. But none of us are prepared to leave it for the good of others. Are we? Put a question for yourself. I don't ask anybody to leave, as Babuji also does not ask. But have that attitude. If it goes, don't worry too much. You don't have to give. But if it goes, are you just prepared to keep quiet? No. You can't help the situation, but your mind is just restless because of the attachment. Lack of determination on our part. You don't have to sacrifice. Sacrifice the attachment, at least. That's my request. Don't sacrifice anything. Sacrifice the attachment.
Thought will lead to action.
I don't know whether it leads or not. First, leave this attachment. That gives you peace of mind. My approach is not social justice, my approach is not ethical. I am just talking about purely spirituality. If you want to have high quality of meditation, the best thing is to leave attachment to these things. Then where is the conflict? I will give you the right to rule the kingdom. Forget for a moment that God, who is helping you, oh Jesus, and Jesus said, no, I will not. I accept God. I don't want your kingdom, because he knows who should be the king or whether he is the king or not. Are we prepared to do that? Don't you think that you want to be all that? And have there not been perverse and very odd interpretations of flying with both the wings of the master? A theory which has been terribly perverted. Can you fly without a skew? Can you ever think of flying high? If you skew is towards the earth, you go down to the material matter. If the skew is towards the sky, you go up. Flying with both the wings means straight flying, or you will only be cruising, just like a car. At whatever level you are, at whatever plane you are. Has this not been one of the most misinterpreted messages of the master? So these conflicting thoughts that we are talking about are the dirt and refuse. We must get rid of it. Without it, the road to divinity is not clear. You cannot go. While meditating, if you secure even a temporary lull, that means you have gone a step further on the path. This is what I wanted you to remember. When I started the talk, I gave you this. He comes to us. It's a matter of our experience. The deep silence is a matter of experience, not an assertion of somebody. Not a possibility, but a real experience of all the people who are gathered here. Every one of us have gone through that. And that shows that we are on the path. And the divinity is giving its helping hand. If you want to lose that hand, it is your choice. But if you hold to it firmly, you will definitely get rid of the attachments. But here, you seem to be having a tug of war. One hand this side, another hand this side. You don't know where to go. Have the wisdom to leave it. Because anyway it will cling. Simply you say that I have no attachment to your wife or children, they are not going to go away from you. They are going to be there. Whether you are attached or not attached, they are going to be there with you. Whatever your attitude, they will be still with you. Runanubandha rupena bandhu mitra suta dharalayaha. Right? Over. Subject is over. So long as that Rana is there, they will be there. They will not be there even 1 minute afterwards. They will not go 1 minute earlier. Then why stick to it? They are anyway sticking to us. Then why should we stick to it? It is wisdom.
So till their runa is there, they'll stick to you.
They will stick to you. What will they do? They should have that. And justice will be done. God ja samavarti. Justice will be done. I don't care for the kingdom. I don't care for my wife. I don't care for my son. But then the kingdom stayed on for some time. The wife stayed on for some time. The son also stayed on for some time. Till finally Harishchandra got rid of all. One stayed on up to some time only. And afterwards, the other connection continued. Till it was lost. This happens. Okay, we don't like that example. Then we'll think about Dharmaraja, the Mahaprasthana. All the five went together, six for the 5+1, and then one after another they dropped, and then nobody stopped for the other. If they were to have been the weak souls that as we are, they would have simply stopped along with the all sitting together along with their Dara, namely Draupadi. And not one step forward afterwards. The wisdom of those souls were that they moved on. Okay, sentimentally it appeals to you something as odd, that what is this, this man is talking like this. So when somebody goes, you should move on. What else will you do? Am I not talking an existential proposition? Somebody goes, what else are you going to do? Anyway, this is what you are going to do. I am only asking you to have the wisdom, that's what you are going to do. I am not asking anything unnatural. If you have to retire, you will retire. Nobody is going to ask you to stay for 1 minute more. Okay, he grants you an extension. Okay, he grants you an extension, lease. Another 1 year you will stay. Afterwards, you go. When the time comes, you go. Who is going to stop that? No, no, sir, I have got so much of responsibility, I have to clear it off. If this fellow retires me today, what am I to do? Whatever you do, you do. But that fellow is going to ask you to get out. This is what is going to happen. Okay, it is not so. Come to your hospital. You know that person cannot be cured anymore. You are going to discharge him. Whether he likes it or not, you are going to discharge him. What will happen to me, sir? I am like this. If I go home, nobody is there to care for me. I will stay there. No, no, no. The bed has to be vacated. Some better patient is there. Perhaps he'll get cured. Nobody can save you. You better go home. Is that not what you say? So, can you hold on to a place more than the required time? More than the just time? He will not ask you to stay.
Only in the community of thoughts.
No, you can fool yourself thinking that you can have an eternal existence. Be prepared for the day when you should say goodbye. Use that momentary happiness, saying that you are on the path, and still we are not determined. We are not determined to leave the filth, the dirt, the negative forces. Why? Why does it happen?